Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Creekside Room, today's speaker is Jan Buescher, and she will be speaking on Feminist Spirituality, Tape 3. So let's listen in on Jan Buescher.
I mentioned yesterday that feminist theology and feminist spirituality comes out of our experience. And our experience comes to us through our eyes, through our ears. And so this morning, I'd like to invite us into prayer, listening to a tape by a great musician woman from Australia. His name is Trisha Watts, and I'll just pass that tape around so we can see at least what it looks like. And the music this morning is like a mantra.
Oh,
story is called The Face of a Tiger, and it has language in it that may be offensive to you. And I thought about going through it and taking out the offensive language, but it feels so important for the anger and the fear that it expresses that I apologize to you if the language is offensive, but I decided to use it because it feels so important. I used to teach first grade, and so I'd have a whole bunch of wiggly-squiggly 30 first graders laying on the floor listening to my stories. So I'll feel very comfortable if you want to sit on the floor. I'm going to, because that's one of my favorite places. And if you want to lay on the floor, if you want to take off your shoes, take off your belt, take off whatever feels comfortable, and just plunk yourself down while I tell the story. When I was a child, I was often sick with illnesses that put me close to death. In those years, many young people died from diseases that would now be considered trivial. An ear infection could trigger a fever, cause convulsions, and kill a child in a matter of hours. That fast, and they were dead. Antibiotics were not widely used, and a tiny cut, if it became infected, could easily prove fatal. I had many of those, tiny cuts, infections, and sickness. I had an attack of appendicitis on a train from Chicago to Minneapolis. I remember vomiting over the top of the seat in front of me onto a bald man's head and doubling with pain as they tried to find a doctor somewhere in one of the cars. And I would have died then had they not gotten me to a small hospital and operated that night. As they put the ether mask over my face and the stink of the gas cut into my throat, I screamed, and I saw my mother there. She had what I came to call the face of the tiger. Her eyes looked worried and tight with something I did not understand. It looked like anger, though I could not understand why she was angry at me for becoming ill, and it frightened me. I did not know that the anger was not for me, but for someone else. I did not understand that she would become the tiger and literally fight to save me. Once, when danger came in an alley near a Minneapolis apartment, I saw my mother fight, saw her become the tiger for the first time. There were then, just as there are now, terrible, sick, depraved, and disgusting men who attacked children. And my mother warned me about them, told me the cliches about taking candy from strangers. But when the danger came, it did not offer me candy. I was in the back of a small billboard, peeing in the corner of a building, when suddenly the corner grew dark and there was a man. He was just an older man with stubble. He was not dirty, not a bum. He was just a man standing in the opening between the wall and the sign, and he said nothing. His eyes were too bright, and he licked his lips and fumbled with his fly. I tried to run past him, but he grabbed me by the shirt and held me, and I know now, realize now, how close I was to an end. I wanted to scream, and I could not even do that. I dangled like a rabbit taken by a wolf, not able to move, not able to do anything but hang and wait for whatever was coming. Wait in stunned shock, and then I felt the man lurch sideways. "You son of a bitch," my mother screamed, her voice a rake with teeth. "You drop him, you son of a bitch, you son of a bitch." I scrambled free and ran through the man's legs. But instead of running, I turned and looked back because my mother had changed. She had grown and was something different. She was no longer attacking a man to get me free, but attacking him to end him, to kill all he represented. She hit him again and again, knocking him down, and when he was down, she kicked him in the head.
He yelled, but she was almost silent, her breath coming in short snarls. And when he tried to cover his head with his hands, she found holes, openings, and she kicked him again and again with her sharp pointed shoes until she found his temple. And he lay still. I do not know if she killed him. I only know that to my young eyes, he looked very still, except that his fingers curled and uncurled slowly, like a snake does when it chopped off his head. Then she stopped and leaned over him and spat on him, ripping great breaths, and she said one more time, "Not him, you son of a bitch. Not my son." She took my hand and led me home and was angry with me for going behind the billboard. For days I watched her, my mother. She was not a large woman, but well-built, sturdy from farm stock, and strong from a life of working hard. Strong and straight, with large breasts, immense eyes, fine teeth, and great Nordic beauty that belied her strength. We people from Minnesota know lots of women that look like that. And maybe you people from the Northwest do too. I watched her, waiting for the face of the tiger to come again, fearing that she would hurt me. But it did not come again until I was dying in a hospital and saw her with the priest. For a time during the war, I seemed to draw pneumonia like honey draws flies, and my mother took care of me. I would get a cold. It would turn into pneumonia, then get worse and turn into double pneumonia. And then after a stay in the hospital, I would recover. Then not long after, I would fall sick and get pneumonia, and the cycle would continue again. And it did, until finally it came to a hospital room in Minneapolis. I cycled into a cold, and then pneumonia, and then double pneumonia, and the doctors told my mother that I would not live. I was not there when they told her this, but I knew it was different this time, because they put me in an oxygen tent, and the nurses moved in silence. They looked at me through the wrinkled plastic as my breathing rasped, and my mother sat next to the bed, watching me with sadness as she held my hand beneath the tent. And that is when the priest came. We were no religion much, but we were not Catholic the most. Do you think they were And when my mother turned and saw the priest, she went into a rage. He was the hospital chaplain, and he had heard that a boy was dying, and he came to the room to help. But my mother did not see it as that. Her eyes blazed, and she saw death. He meant death. Meant to her that I was dying, and she screamed, "You son of a bitch, not now, get out of here." And she swore as she leapt from the side of the bed with the same growl she had used on the man in the back of the billboard. She attacked the priest with her hands open and slapping him back and back through the door and out of the room. She came back in and slammed the door and looked up. The low, throaty sound filled her words and she said, "Not now, you son of a bitch. Not my son." And of course, she meant God. She would fight him, would not let him take me. And I thought, felt, knew then that nothing could hurt me as long as she was over me, my tiger mother, with her low sounds and her strong arms. And I saw it all through the crinkled plastic of the oxygen tent in the hospital. The images that came to you as I She's walking down the little Holy Village, and she is a chaplain in a shelter for women and children. And she asked me last month if I would come and do some storytelling with those women. I read this story, and their reaction was anger. They were furious. None of them had a tiger mother. None of them, not one of them, had a mother to guard the space for them. So they identified in the story with the child who had no one for protection. And I'm wondering about you. And I don't want you to answer me right away, but just think, did you identify with the child who had a tiger mother to protect her and guard her or him? Did you identify with the mother who is a tiger and fiercely protecting her children? Or father. So just notice which part you identify. And what I'd ask you to do now is to come and grab a piece of paper and just a moment and a pen. I know these work, I'm not sure about this. And what I'd invite you to do is to pay attention with the part that you identify with. And to notice if you identified as a tiger mother or father, do you want to have a conversation with a child of yours about being the tiger mother? If you identified with the child in the story, do you want to have a conversation with your mother? Like, I have some anger with Dorothy, my biological mother, for not protecting me in the ways that I wanted to be protected. I have some anger. I want this mind to have another conversation with Dorothy about that. Is it possible that you could imagine God being Tiger Mother? And would you like to have a conversation with Tiger Mother, God, about her protection of you, of your family? So the way I'd like to suggest this morning that you journal would be to do it in the form of a conversation. So I just started a conversation with my mom. And I just say, Mom, I'm going to talk to you. And then the next line would be, she'd say, you know, what are we going to talk about? And I'd say, I'm going to talk to you because when I was little and felt sad, I didn't get to do that. And so I grew up with all these feelings inside of my body that I carry around. So I'd invite you to take the paper and the pen and to start a journal dialogue back and forth with your child, with your mother, maybe with Tiger Mother God, if you feel like you want to venture into that. And just see what happens as your conversation gets going. When I do this journal dialogue in my journal, I'm often surprised at what comes, at what shows up. Now, you can stay in this room if you want to. You can go out in the library, you can go outside. We'll write just for about 10 minutes. So will you come back in about 20 after 12, back into this room?
Gina, if you're doing it with your son, that's the table that they
have. So you're supposed to say,
oh, yeah, so Matthew, I'm going to talk to him about this. I'm going to talk to him about this.
Would the lights help? Do you want lights on?
No.
It's great.
Jan, do you want to light up?
No, I don't.
No.
Thank you.
Yesterday, when we talked about wild women, we paid attention to the idea that intuition, following our intuition, is at the core of us, and we've been talked out of our intuition, especially in school situations. So I'm going to make a suggestion about what you do next, and what I'd invite you to do is pay attention to your intuition. Do you want to do what I'm going to suggest? And if you don't, be sure to respect your intuition and don't do it. So, this is my suggestion. And watch what happens in your body when I invite you to do this. When I journal, I'm surprised sometimes at what happens in the conversation. I'm also surprised what happens to me when I read what I've written out loud. I was a part of a group of women in Berkeley where we just came from on a sabbatical, and we published a women's newsletter in the church where I was, and we decided to do a reading as people wrote all kinds of just incredibly amazing things from their lives, and we published this newsletter, sent it out to everybody, and then we decided to do a reading. So we especially invited any woman who had written for the newsletter to come and read her stuff out loud. And they did, and all kinds of people said it was one thing to write it down in my journal, and then another to open up my journal and send this in for publication, knowing people were going to read it, and then to come and read it out loud. And they said each step gave me more courage to express myself and to use my voice. Now, guess what? What I would invite you to do next is to sit with somebody, one person, and if you want, to read what you've written out loud, not to the whole group, just to that one other person, so that you can hear your voice say what you've written. And if that feels like way too much because what you wrote is so in your guts, and too scary, and too personal, and too whatever, and you don't want to do it, don't. Follow your wild self. Follow your intuition. And then just speak. And if you don't want to talk, don't pick it up. You just may want to go sit in the library, or go outside and look at the sun. And then come back in about 10 minutes, because we're going to do one more thing. So notice your intuition. Do you want to get with one more person? Do you want to read out loud? Now, do what your intuition says. You all know the story of Helen Keller. If you close your eyes for a moment and imagine that you could not see one person in this room, and then imagine that you couldn't speak, except to make sounds. And now, just for a moment, put your fingers over your ears. Take them away now and open your eyes. Just having that moment where you couldn't see and couldn't speak and couldn't hear. You can imagine how terrorizing it must have been to be Helen Keller and to not know what it was to have somebody touch you, to not know if that was a moose or a bear or whatever. And so no wonder she was that wild and crazy child who comes over and upset the furniture and spit stuff out of her mouth. Of course, she grew up like that. And her mother and father loved her and did not know what to do for her, did not know how to connect with her. And so they invited Annie Sullivan. And I don't know if you've seen pictures of Annie Sullivan.
She's this big, bosomy woman.
And she marched into their house like an army sergeant, and she sat Helen Keller down in her chair, and she made it perfectly clear that this was the chair, and this was where she was to sit, and that this was the fork. When she was going to eat anything, she was going to put the fork in her hand, and she was going to eat with the fork. And so Helen knew that there was some other person in her life, and this other person was doing some things to her that had never been done before. And then Annie Sullivan began to do this. She began to spell the words in Helen's hands, and of course she did get it. She had no idea what this was. Until, if you've seen The Miracle Worker or seen the movie, you know that the two of them went to the well. And that magical moment when the water started flowing down through Helen's hands, and Annie is doing this, and all of a sudden she gets it. She knows that this and the water are the same. I believe that you and I are Helen Keller. We can't see, and often can't speak, and usually can't hear. And God is big bosomed Annie Sullivan, who comes marching into our lives, and she does this over and over and over again, and we don't get it. We have no idea that she's trying so hard to get through to us, except once in a while. Once in a while, we go to the well, and once in a while, we get it. So will you open your hands this morning? And as Annie Sullivan God comes to you to spell the words in your hands, what word is she spelling? What word does she want to get through to you today? And when you know your word, will you take it and put your word over your heart? And breathe your word into your body. And if a word doesn't come, it's okay. Maybe it's a feeling. Breathe your feeling, breathe your word from Annie Sullivan.